Suddenly, you've got this mindset that has shifted into the fact that it's about the dream, the dream, the dream, the dream. I want it now. And that becomes a mental distraction that actually gets in the way of you achieving your dream. Poor performance is a mindset that, just doesn't see opportunities. It always sees challenges. It tends to beat itself up. That agile mindset to cope with change is also really, really necessary. Some say, well, actually, perhaps the mental edge lasts forever, but actually, if you don't manage it, it doesn't last forever. It can suddenly become really, really blunt. Because ironically, if you do something purposeful and you do engage with the family and you make time for the family, you will bring a better mindset to the market when you come to the market.
Often traders put their priorities into finding a system, method, or approach which finds value or generates ideas in the market. But what is the point of focusing all your attention on that if you aren't able to monetize those ideas, systems, and methods effectively? Too often, traders get in their own way. They become too nervous, too anxious, too racked with self-doubt to play out their system or method effectively. Other times, they get carried away. They get on a good run and then become overconfident or over-optimistic and veer off of process in ways which are self-defeating. Then there are times when the market changes, a bull market ends, or a bear market ensues, or the market enters a soul-destroying sideways spell. The job of trading is only partly about strategy and method. And when I say partly, the technical aspects are really the easy part. Whilst people devote vast amounts of energy to trying to find and develop the holy grail of trading systems or methods or approaches, it's worth chewing on the fact that the most successful traders do not have superior systems or methods to anyone else. What they do have is the ability to apply themselves more effectively. This is because they have the ability to work at peak levels of performance more often and more regularly, and they are more able to sustain those levels. This enables them to win more when conditions are favorable and lose less when they aren't, using the same methods, system, and approaches that everyone else uses. For this episode, I'm going to be interviewing my usual co-host, Mark Randall, on this subject. Mark coaches traders on how to develop peak performance by focusing on themselves and how they can bring the best of themselves to their trading. This enables them to start cultivating a peak performance mindset for more optimal trading performance on a more sustained basis. Before we go into the podcast, I would like to mention our podcast partner, the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. The Society of Technical Analysts is recognized worldwide as one of the largest and most widely respected not-for-profit organizations which trains and accredits members of the trading and investment community in the study of technical analysis. The STA have been setting the standards in technical analysis for over 50 years and have been teaching their programs to students at some of the world's leading academic bodies. At AlphaMind, we have a personal interest in the STA. We have been associated with them for many years as members, and I've been associated with them personally for the past 10 years as a lecturer on the behavioural finance model of their diploma programme, which is delivered at the world-renowned London School of Economics. The STA's brilliant diploma programme in technical analysis has been written and produced by some of the leading figures in the world of technical analysis. And whilst it has, until recently, only been offered for face-to-face delivery, it is now available in an online home study course package to people across the world. As part of our association with the STA, we are delighted to be able to offer listeners of the AlphaMind podcast a special £100 sterling or local currency equivalent discount on the full cost of the home study course and the home study course and diploma package. To find out more about the home study course, visit the Society of Technical Analysts at technicalanalysts.com. To find out about the discount and how to apply it, visit our blog page by Googling AlphaMind blog or going to alphamindblog.blogspot.com and going to the STI Home Study Course page link at the top of the blog page. Now on with this week's podcast. Welcome to this week's episode with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall, who actually turns from co-host to guest today. Lovely. Welcome, Mark.
Lovely to be here, and it's great to have another hat on.
Now, today we're going to talk about peak performance and what peak performance means in a world of increased volatility and uncertainty and complexity and ambiguity, particularly in terms of the audience we speak to, the trading world and the investing world. And it has many similarities with the world of sport, but it also differs from it quite similar and had similarities to the world of gaming and the world of maybe poker. And we're also going to talk about that in light of, you know, this is your area of expertise. You provide coaching programs for people, not just traders, investors, senior managers, leaders, executives, people from many worlds, of how to bring yourself to a peak performance mindset. And I know our audience would love to hear about that. So perhaps you can just go off from the top of your head about this area and this field and what you do.
Sure. Well, thanks. It's good to sort of share this, really. I always start off really with the concept of understanding what is the opposite to peak performance. What is, like, I guess, what does rubbish performance look like? And rubbish, if you look at the concept of someone that's just not performing, you know, I think you can start to understand that, you know, it's rubbish process. It's not understanding what they're getting involved with as a universe to perform. And of course, in trading, that's of course the market. It's about not having really a program of just caring for yourself. It's poor performances where perhaps you tend to look too hard and, you know, you overtrade because you have some sort of desperation of wanting to achieve a target before you should naturally be achieving that target. You want things to happen too soon. Poor performance is a very stressed state where, you know, you're just not managing yourself. And of course, stress leads to being really too focused on just the bid and offer rather than the breadth of the market. And thus, poor performance is a mindset that, you know, just doesn't see opportunities. It always sees challenges. It tends to beat itself up. It tends to look back and dwell and relive, you know, trading disasters or personal disasters. And of course, that leads to a distraction, a mental distraction where you get in your own way. And poor performance links to that, where, you know, we try to be clever, but we end up just building these walls where we just can't function in performance type environments. So it starts off for me, when performance starts off about your just your natural state. So, you know, the physicality of you, you know, the wellness of you, the work-life balance to some extent of you and how you, you know, you do other things as well as, you know, trading, because life is more about just trading. And of course, it's how you wind down, how you approach the day and how you then engage with the day and manage your state throughout the day, how you end the day, how you rest into the evening and how you rest overnight. All of those things are where you should be starting, at a starting point. And then, of course, it's a bit like swimming. If you're on the beach and you're suddenly told, okay, you're going to learn to swim. And you sort of paddle into the water to sort of get your feet wet and sense the fact that you know what water feels like, because that's going to be where you're heading. But, of course, to go beyond paddling to swimming requires training. It requires you to understand the dynamics of what swimming is all about, and kind of trading is a bit like that. You know, you can get your feet wet a little bit, but actually, and think, well, this is quite nice, I'm enjoying this, but then realize that, you know, there are some waves out there, and you think, well, I can probably cope with those, let's venture out a bit further. And then, of course, when you think, oh, this is busy, this is active, this is volatile in terms of the movement, I can probably cope with this, let's increase my risk, let's go a bit further. And then suddenly you don't realize that actually on a busy, active, stormy sort of day, you've got 20-foot waves to deal with. And, of course, then you start to drown. And then, of course, you then start to lose all appetite for risk. I think the market looks – it's a very similar thing for markets. People sort of entering the market, getting their feet wet, thinking they can take on more risk, but don't have the education around how to deal with the stuff that suddenly can come, because the market's kind of invisible. You know, for people that are not too experienced in the market, the headwinds that can suddenly appear, the undercurrents that can suddenly appear, the things that you don't expect that can come out of the darkness, you know, like a shark in the sea, but in the market like a shock, can take people out. So, you know, markets can take people out. And so when it comes to performance, it's all about those things that that you sort of have before then of the understanding of risk, the understanding of what you're getting yourself into, the understanding that yourself is very, very functional in terms of your performance per se in this thing called the market. And so, you know, we know that from a mindset point of view, from our own discussions in these podcasts, it's just critical to be managing the whole element of pause and stepping back and letting go. And that's where sort of our programs and my program in particular focuses upon. It focuses on the concept that actually stepping away and pausing is actually very, very powerful, giving yourself space to think and space to then take on a challenge and then walk towards something difficult and something complicated, and having that sort of freshness of mind and that calmness of mind and that ability to, you know, have a relaxed sense of approach rather than a stiffened sense that just expects everything, you know, it expects profit all the time, rather than the pragmatic approach of just knowing that you're going to get knocked out every now and then. You know, how are you going to reset yourself after that and come back to the market becomes, you know, really, really critical. And of course, it's what you then, you know, are trading within the market is all part of this. You know, your own personality. You want to kind of match your personality with the product. You know, there are certain products that with your personality type you may be best avoiding. And so aligning personality type with product type is something that I know your work, Steve, looks at the dynamic of that and how someone's trading style can be aligned to their personality. And I look a bit deeper at that and try to ask those questions early on in the dialogue of someone, you know, approaching the market and maybe even to want to reapproach themselves in the market, having maybe for decades tried and just got nowhere. There is this opportunity of thinking, okay, I now need to look at myself very differently, almost reappraise what I've been doing, why I've been doing it, when I've been doing it, how I've been doing it, because as we know, the whole market's changing. And so that agile mindset to cope with change is also really, really necessary. Because the change that's going on, as we've seen this year with some of these, you know, these other product types that have got super, super busy for perhaps reasons that we wouldn't necessarily have seen in the markets historically, but for new types of reasons and the social trending sort of stuff. You know, having a mindset that doesn't sort of, you know, just kick those things into touch, but kind of appreciates what the dynamic of what's going on. And to make a judgment about that.
So if I'm trying to put myself in the position of our audience, and let's say I was to segment them into, I suppose you could say our audience is that there's three different groups. There's the relatively new trader, the retail trader, who is often in their first 2, 3, maybe 4 years of their career. And they're desperate to learn and develop this. And they're struggling, you know, to replicate peak performance on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, I kind of call them the individual who's got through boot camp and is maybe at first base camp. Mm-hmm. At the next level, the 4, maybe to sort of 7 or 8 years trader, they've shown their mettle, they've started to work, they've started to generate some income. For some people, they'll be already producing some really decent income. For others, you know, they're starting to keep their head above water. And then there's a seasoned trader, which I would say around about 7 or 8 years plus, who've started to show some real consistency over many years. Some might be in institutional backgrounds. Some might be working with their own money, but they are starting to move towards what you would say is a real pro level. And that could go from anywhere from 7 or 8 years to 25 to 30 years to called almost that mastery level. But the peak performance means different things at different levels, I find. One of the challenges of trading is it always tests you. Doesn't matter whether you're new, whether you're advanced beginner, whether you're now a seasoned pro or deeply experienced master. It's a constant journey. And we saw that with Tom Canfield recently in that fantastic interview with him, that it's always going to test you all the time. And we're changing and the environment's changing and the master is changing. So how they might be saying, I'm a peak performer, but perhaps they're not. So what does that mean for different levels of trader, in your opinion?
Well, I think that if you look at it, in fact, I think there's a fourth one. That I think there's people that are coming at this as a gamification and suddenly finding trading as an app and just getting on with it. So I think there's another quality out there.
It's true.
But I think that, as I've coached people, you do find that there's no sort of there's common denominators, but actually when you start to go into the depth, then you find that people and their circumstances are so different, and so you can't presume that there's a senior package or a junior package or an intermediate package. There are some common denominators across all three, but there's certainly dependent upon background and culture and product type and even just the way they do things in terms of process, that there are different tweaks that you can make to all of those things within the framework of the sort of training that we do. So it's not off of the shelf, and I think it is very bespoke to each particular individual. And that means that it's very difficult for people to pick up books and understand to find a solution, because the solution won't be solving for that person's personal bespoke requirement. I think there's a lot of people out there that are very frustrated in terms of reading lots and lots of material and yet not finding the answer that they can get on with. And I think that's because a lot of the reading material is written, from a one person perspective, facing the market. And I think that's slightly why I quite like Jack Swager's sort of material, because at least it's people telling their own story, and you can pick up some clues from there. But I think with this type of training, you really need to start at the individual and work through the discussion with the individual, and then create a program based upon the requirements of that particular individual.
So peak performance is very different for everyone.
I think it is. And I think it means thing. It is very, sorry, very different meaning for every person. I mean, your peak performance might be, I'm a day trader, so I want to make this per day. Somebody else's peak performance might be, I'm a swing trader, I don't want to lose this amount. So their perspective is around what they don't want to lose. Somebody else might be, well, I'm a longer term trader, and my performance is around a portfolio return. So the gauge of performance is really, really different. And I think, if someone's trading point and figure charts, it's sort of skinning your teeth moment by moment, very, very short term. If someone's trading an hourly bar, it's slightly longer, a 5-minute bar, all the stochastics and things that are triggering signals are different layers. And of course, you then have to look at the product type. So, the speed of potential profitability in certain markets is higher than others. And we know that the volatility of equities is higher than the volatility of short-term interest rates. So there's also a skew in terms of the product. I think there's also a skew in terms of the complexity of what people are looking at. So you might have someone looking at spread trades, you might have someone looking at the optionality of a market. And so their concept of performance lies almost within the mathematics of understanding the option side or an arbitrage type technique, as opposed to someone over here that's just doing, I'm just buying and selling all day long.
Okay, but underneath all that, if we say that's the technical outer layer of what they do, there's something about them that's stopping them being able to engage with that at a high level.
Yeah.
And that comes back to them, the self, the person. So, how do you bring that back? You've got all these different competing demands from different people. How do you bring that back to the person and then work with them so they could become more effective in what they do? How do you address that challenge, first of all? Or how do you even come up that challenge? And again, how does that differ for the different classes of people that we were talking about?
Well, it stems down to distraction. Because when we're distracted, we're taken somewhere that often we don't like. But we're triggered. There's a tripwire process to get us into this. Suddenly we're distracted away from what we should be doing. So performance is suddenly not in a 45 degree direction that way. Mm-hmm. We're suddenly in a situation where we've been distracted by an event. Now, that event can be a mental event. It can be a replay of a historic event that suddenly takes us on a journey that's just not where we are now. It's somewhere between our ears, you know, but we're getting wound up by it and upset by it.
Could you give a practical example of that without giving, obviously, general, so it doesn't reveal anything about any clients, but can you give a couple of examples of what that may look like to our audience or sound like or seem like?
In a way, Tom Canfield talked about that very lucidly in his podcast with us, where he replayed a 30-second moment in his market's history that cost $500,000. And you could see, even that was several years ago, even within the podcast, the silence of him churning that and reliving that moment was palpable. And he'd found it quite difficult. I think he had to move location and change his trading style to eventually, you know, detangle himself away from something that was distracting him away from getting back involved in the market. So that's one sort of very good example. Another example is where someone I know was actually getting distracted by a personal relationship. So it had nothing to do with the market.
Mm-hmm.
To do with something of someone that was going through a bit of a tragedy at home. And quite normally, he was not trading optimally because actually it was having to do with the emotions of a very, very personal moment. And of course, we all have various intensities of personal moments that take us away. And if we're in that state, it's best not that we're trading the market in that state. You know, we have to manage ourselves and spend time managing ourselves. And it'd be a mistake to actually to forget about those things and actually trade the markets, because you wouldn't be trading the markets particularly well. So those types of distractions can be really emotional from a trading sense. They can be emotional from a very private personal sense. But it also can be from a frustration. So you can be frustrated with yourself that I'm staring at this screen all day long. I'm almost forced to trade because I can't just sit here and do nothing.
Yeah.
So you have to get people to understand that sometimes there are days when, you know, you just need to step away and actually to fragment your day into trading periods where you've got some space in between to do something else or to get some fresh air or go for a walk. It's pretty damned important. So that, I think frustration can be a distraction. Also, just where you are now. I mean, there are some people, that one particular person, I mean, you could tell from the Zoom conversation, he just lived in this mess. He was a trader, but it was just this state of disruption around him. And I said, wherever you are at the moment, is it getting in your way? And he said, well, yes, really. And I said, well, look, if you didn't have the piles of washing there and the rubbish there, and you were in a nicer environment, would that change your mood to want to be trading better? And he said, well, actually, it would. You know, now you talked about it, and this to me is normal. So he went about decluttering the physicality of the space around him to give him a nice, clean trading environment. And that improved his mood and that improved his trading. So distraction can take various different shapes. And I think there's also a distraction that comes from the frustration of not understanding what you're doing. Okay, so this is where we start to talk about the golden source, about how it's important that, you know, people listen to things like these podcasts, because, you know, we've collectively got about 80 years of market experience. You know, understand the benefits of things like the home study course for the Society of Technical Analysts. You know, the golden source for information and the importance of building, you know, true understanding of the markets. Because if you understand the market, you'll be less frustrated by it. And when you're less frustrated, you're less distracted by your distraction of being frustrated. So those things are quite important. I think a lot of people get in their own way. It's because we just don't know how to manage these things. Some of them need us to take time out, and we need to manage. And we have to be compassionate towards ourselves and think, actually, I need a few days away to, you know, to just, you know, move on from this event, or as Tom was talking about, actually physically change location, and then actually change the style of this whole process. So yeah, and distraction is a common theme. And it is the biggest thing of getting in, it's the biggest thing to get in the way of peak performance, which is actually you almost starting to not believe in yourself.
What's interesting about hearing you talk about this is, I'm imagining that if I was an audience member and I saw that you are about to listen to a podcast about peak performance, that you're going to talk about physical preparation, mental state based on perhaps physical preparation, all those themes, you know, hydration, nutrition. I'm sure you will mention that in any program. I'm pretty sure that's part of it. But actually, they are not the main parts. You know, what you're talking about now is the real deal. It's the stuff that goes on top, and it's the stuff that really represents peak performance. You know, anyone, yeah, I suppose, and everyone could and should be doing those. And they're quite quick fixes. But this sounds like it's the hard stuff, the tough stuff.
Yeah, the hard stuff is working out actually what these things are for each individual. You know, asking these honest questions about, you know, what really is getting in your way? What's, you know, where does your mind wander to when you're suddenly having a market block? Where's it gone beforehand to create a market block, and what triggered it to go there?
Yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, yeah, right physical exercise, right diet, right rest, right hydration kind of has to be there as a natural state of you managing you anyway. And if you're not doing any of that stuff, then, you know, you're already on a bit of a losing wicket. And if you don't do any of that stuff, it makes the dealing with the rest of this stuff really, really difficult. But, you know, so it's part of the solution to doing the difficult stuff is to make sure your fundamental stuff is, you know, you've got a plan for that, and you're sticking to the personal process around that plan. And then, of course, you've got the market, you know, the complexity of having to face something that you that people sort of understand, but we don't understand. You know, there are bits and pieces of the market that you know, just happen. And so you've got this fast-moving, changing environment. And so you need to be top of your game. But, of course, if you're mind's daydreaming about these catastrophes, and they can be, like I say, triggered by all sorts of different things. If you're not managing the trigger points, these distractions, you're going to carry on trying to trade, but every a few moments you're going to find yourself in this other world and not taking the full opportunity out of the market by being fully engaged and conscious to what's going on. It's almost like we drift into this unconsciousness driven by distraction, where we think we're paying attention, but we go into some sort of autopilot state where, and it's a relatively natural state for most people, where we wander into this negative mind wandering. Now, the difficulty is that if some of the things that trigger us into that negative mind wandering are really difficult things, painful things, that mind wandering turns into anxiety and depression and, you know, a total loss in faith of yourself. You know, that becomes a really, really big difficulty. I think, of course, we know in markets, you know, unfortunately, that it goes beyond that. Some suicides happen, you know, as people get into this really, really bad state. So, you know, so and managing themselves in the sense of understanding what your triggers are, doing what you can to control the ones you can control, and not dwelling too much on the things you can't control, which tend to be the things that are in the future, where you're worrying about how am I going to make money next week? How am I going to, you know, leave the UK because I've always dreamt of wanting to live in California and this whole trading program is going to get me to California. If that dream is too big, it becomes a distraction that almost makes you overtrade because the dream is so big you want to get there now. It's like the Lamborghini dream of I want it now.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to take time, but the dream becomes a distraction. So, you know, you're trading, but you suddenly, I'm frustrated because I want this now. Well, you know, it doesn't work that way. And you need to kind of forget about that mental distraction of an expectation of winning, you know, quickly, because as we know, in general, you know, people lose money quickly.
So what would you say are characteristics of a peak performer? And how can a person start to make a progression towards that if they're not there?
Yeah, I think at a fundamental level, if you think about it from a sport point of view, you've got to understand your game in a 360-degree sort of view of your game. You know, the risk of your game, the opportunity of your game, the competition within your game, the scope of your game, the chance, you know, the luck of the game, all those types of things. That was in golf, as you say, the rub of the green. You know, if you're going, you suddenly get a shot that just happens to hit the bunker that hits the pin off of the fact that you weren't aiming that way, but it's in the hole. You know, you get a bit of luck every now and then. I think that people just need to appreciate that, you know, you need an agile, flexible mindset to be able to achieve that. And so you need to understand the game. You need to be trained by people that understand the game as well. So there's no point, if you're going into a peak performance athletic, you know, say something like the pole vault, which is very, very technical, you know, you don't want to be trained by the guy that throws a javelin very well. You know, but he says, I'm in athletics, mate, but I'm a javelin thrower, but I can teach you how to pole vault. You know, so you want to be taught by the right people that have actually done and been in.
It's not really teaching, is it? It's closer to mentoring.
Yeah, and it's almost exchanging the sense of what feel means. Mm-hmm. Certainly in golf, we have that. I mean, the sense of you know, it's not just about you swing and you hit your ball and off you go. It's a case of, well, how should it feel when I'm holding the club? Should I be tense or should I be holding the club like I'm holding a young child's hand? You know, you sense it, but you're not gripping it. That there's a big difference. And I think that you know, those little subtle things of mentoring about, you know, if you're lifting the heel on the backswing of your left foot when in golf, and you don't realize you're lifting it, but you're wondering why you're slicing the ball. Someone mentoring you is going to be saying, yeah, you should be paying attention to this. I didn't realize I was doing that. So you need that sense of experience, those wise eyes that come from coaching and mentoring to sort of, you know, every now and then give you a bit of a soundbite that has a dramatic impact on performance. And I think, you know, those things, as we know, are super powerful. It can only be a very small thing. But little tweaks can make the significant difference. And I think coaching and mentoring works on the basis that it's sort of stepping back a little bit with the client and actually thinking, well, they're so close to this that they don't realize they're doing that.
Yeah.
And by them doing that is causing their whole performance to fall apart. So they should step back and understand that actually tweak that and actually your performance will change.
And that's very hard for someone to do on their own, which is why coaching and mentoring are both so powerful. We will return to the podcast shortly. First, a quick word about our podcast sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. We are delighted to be able to promote their brilliant STA Technical Analysis Home Study Course. Listeners to the Alpha Man podcast interested in studying for the Home Study Course can get an exclusive discount by visiting the Alpha Man blog page, where they can find a link to the Home Study Course at the top of the page. Go to alphamindblog.blogspot.com or just Google Alpha Man blog. Now back to this week's podcast. I'm again, very conscious and mindful that a lot of people would be listening. A lot of them would be thinking, well, hopefully some of them would be thinking, oh, I must contact Mark Randall about his high performance coaching course. And you could tell us about that a little bit afterwards and how they can reach you about that. But for a lot of them be thinking, well, what can I do myself? How can I start to help myself develop peak performance? What are some of the steps I can do on my own with my resources? They may not have the financial resources at this stage to do it. They may be looking for some guidance that they can, you know, some self-help here. So what, you know, bearing in mind how difficult that is, if someone came to you and said, what could I do myself? Can you give me maybe five pieces of advice or five tips? Mm-hmm. What would you be saying to them?
Well, I had a UK-based business school graduate come to me that was coming into trading with exactly that type of question.
Yeah.
And my guidance to him was that, you know, you've made a whole bunch of assumptions in what you've told me as your sort of introduction, but you haven't got a clue about what you're getting involved in.
Right.
Okay. You haven't got, so you need to understand what, you know, almost do a sort of a check on just what you know. Because when you start to look at what you know, you realize there's a hell of a lot of stuff you don't know. And you need to start to really make sure that base of understanding of the product you're trading, the methodology of trading styles that are available, you know, the way to manage risk with stops and all those sort of basic, what we call the basic stuff. But those things you need to have a very good grip on, because actually it's the management of risk that suddenly appears from nowhere is the thing that's going to be killing you rapidly. So it's understanding that, you know, the volatility of product, you know, you need to start to understand and almost do some back testing about, you know, what would be the worst case scenario if I started to behave from a trading point of view, you know, based upon sort of historical tendencies. So you need to do some hard work. So it starts with hard work. You've got to get the base right. You've then got to really, if you want to get involved, don't throw your entire capital at something. You know, just have some money that you can afford to waste, and just see how it feels to be in the market and whether you're comfortable with it, and start to look at what you're trading and ask the question about, actually, do you actually know anything about what you're trading? Because if you don't, you need to find out about that. And then within the whole structure of that, ask yourself the question, well, when I come to the point where it's time I decide to trade in any given day, what am I doing before that to make sure that I'm optimal? Am I just sort of turning the screen on and trading, or am I actually, you know, getting some fresh air, you know, get a little bit of food, get some water inside me, just, you know, just feel good to just come into the market for the, what is your opening bell to then trade? And to then almost put a line in the sand where at this point I want to stop being in the market. You know, so I've either come out of a position or I've left the position with a stop, but I've come away from the screen, you know, and then I come back to the screen at a certain time. Because the problem is that we know that the more people stare at their screens, the more they tend to trade just for the hell of it, because they end up getting bored. And they'll then get frustrated and they'll then get stressed and then they'll end up trading stupid things. And then they'll start losing their money when they should have just stayed on plan and stayed on process. So understanding process as well. You know, when you put a trade on, what emotional state do you want to be when you get put a trade on? If you're in a super stressed state, and then when the trade and when a risk is on, the trade's on, and you stay in a super stressed state, then the chances are you're not going to manage that trade very well at all. So it's just understanding that the state of you can be a great determinant and just how successful you are. And if you're not managing your state, particularly your mental state, then you are not managing your edge, because a lot of your edge is going to come from your mental state. And I think this is what we're starting to, well, what the market is starting to realize from my alpha mind is suddenly becoming so popular, is that people are suddenly realizing that mental state is significant in terms of edge. And actually, whilst no edge lasts forever, and some say, well, actually, perhaps the mental edge lasts forever. But actually, if you don't manage it, it doesn't last forever. It can suddenly become really, really blunt. And so knowing that you need to almost treat your mental game as though you were treating it as a physical game. So you need to do some mental exercises. You need to do some mental rest. Because if you don't, you'll start to blunt your mental edge and it'll become sort of worthless. So actually, you need to just keep on this concept of, well, how do I sharpen my mental edge? How do I manage the distractions that are getting in my way, that are dulling my edge? How am I managing little pauses in my day? So these pauses are, you know, powering up my trading day rather than me just being in front of the screen all day long. So it's about, you know, I suppose it's a very good point, just understanding what's blunting my edge and what's sharpening my edge. And I think a lot of us will almost know the answers to that straight away. And it's actually then doing something about it, because if trading is that important to you, then it's worth your investment in paying attention to develop your mental edge, which is where our Alpha Mind Trader Mental Edge program clicks in, which is about, you know, increasing awareness, making, you know, it's about process, it's about self-management, aligned to the person that's there next to us. Like I say, that can be very different for very, very many different people. There's some commonalities, but in general, if you're going to solve for someone, you need to be, getting a little bit deeper to start off with. And I think once those processes are in place, then people are in a better place. You know, they tend to be in a much more positive mindset. I wouldn't say that they were zenned out to the point that they were, you know, not in the market at all, but somewhere totally else, you know, but they're very tuned in to the market.
So just to repeat that, so the advice you would give to somebody is really first for someone who's a beginner, but even people who are perhaps a little bit more experienced, is really understand, create a base. Number one, understand almost more objectively, step back and understand what it is you're doing and what you're trying to do. Again, for a beginner or even for someone more experienced who may be experimenting a little bit, try it out in a relatively small size to build that base out. So you create, you kind of know what you're doing. I mean, it's almost like you are a partner to yourself along this journey. And then number three, make sure you review what you're doing. Put a line in the sand, like you said. Step away from the action a little bit and be deliberate about what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So, and this reminds me a little bit to something Denise Scholl said in our interview with her last year, where she said that there is no downtime in trading. It's not like sport where you have an end of the game or an end of season. And in a way, it's, I would guess, reinterpret that slightly as create some downtime so you could do this sort of review stuff instead.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the downtime is important to actually follow a bigger purpose as well, having a bigger purpose. And one of the finest traders I ever knew was a Jewish fella, and his bigger purpose was to help underprivileged children. Just actually get food, but he put effort into making that happen, and that sense of sort of community and purpose made him a particularly pleasant person to deal with. He had an aura. He was calm. He was very balanced. He was, from a community perspective, you know, much admired. His family were, you know, he spent time with the family as well, so he had family time. So he had this work-life balance, but also this purpose. And collectively, that made him a better trader. And ironically, the purpose was quite interesting, because he worked in a church on Fifth Avenue in New York. He used to go and help out with the soup kitchen and stay overnight, and I think on Thursday night to help. And some of the biggest deals, because he ended up running quite a large hedge fund, Some of the biggest deals came from the other CEOs that also wanted to have a bigger purpose, that were also helping out at this particular church. And some of these biggest deals came from the fact that he won the deal because he was being seen to be, you know, very purposeful and engaged in this different type of community. And he won some very big business on the back of that because people felt that, you know, he was a man that deserved, you know, to be getting some of their business wallet. But yeah, one of the best, finest traders, but he had a bigger purpose. So also for us, for those that are trading, don't make trading your entire life. You know, have it as something you do, but for God's sake, have a bigger purpose than just trading. You know, do something, you know, purposeful. Don't forget the family. Because ironically, if you do something purposeful and you do engage with the family and you make time for the family, you will bring a better mindset to the market when you come to the market.
And that's really interesting there, because, you know, it brings up a really important point. Something I noticed very early on in my coaching with traders was how many of the best ones never had money as their goal. What is their purpose for it? Some of them were attracted to trading originally by the desire to make a lot of money. But once they got into it, they loved the challenge. They loved the job. You know, that they money wasn't the goal. Money was, in a way, the way of keeping score. But they kind of detached themselves from the money, which paradoxically enabled them to make more money because they were calmer, more relaxed. It wasn't the driving focus.
No, I think it's a very interesting point, and I think you can see some of that in trading rooms. You know, why is it great to be in the trading room? Where actually there's a sense of community. There was the banter. It's like being on the floors of the trading exchanges. You know, that sense of community was something that you just felt good to be within. Obviously, you took the mick out of each other, but when you had great golf days, you had great social stuff going on. But you sensed that you weren't alone, you know, so that you did have this sort of collective responsibility that and understood that, you know, that everyone takes knocks and we're to support people if they do take a knock. And that was very evident, certainly on the early days of the futures trading floor, that people would be suddenly getting washed aside with a bad trade, and suddenly some of the big people would give them flow. So they'd earn money out of the income of executing the flow to make up for the fact that they lost money on a bad trade. So very, very supportive and healing in that sense.
Money is really important, and we should never forget that, because, you know, we all need money, obviously. We are all driven by money and the safety and security it brings, and also some of the, you know, the rewards, obviously, you know, the self-esteem hit that we have from, you know, appearing to have a lot of money drives a lot of people as well. But equally, it can cause lots of problems. It's, you know, it's almost like if someone goes into sport for the money, they're never going to achieve the success in sport. If they went in for, say, the glory and the medals and the desire to win and the love of the sport, you see sports people who get lost in the money sometimes, and they never achieve the potential they had as a sports person.
Whenever money's involved in sport, the dialogue tends to be a difficult dialogue, doesn't it? You know, particularly when you perhaps look at some of the footballers out there, you know, compared to those that are at the front line of the pandemic at the moment. You know, and you look at the people that put any effort in, and yet there's people earning the same amount per half hour that someone earns, you know, in 6 months to a year. So a sense of humanity, I think, is really important. It's about just understanding that, you know, and giving is super important. So if you are, you know, the likes of the Bill Gates Foundation, you know, gets to a point where actually the giving back becomes important. Warren Buffett, giving back.
Money complicates things.
Money complicates things. And actually, when you look at it, you don't need an awful lot of money to live. I think, as Warren Buffett said, the only thing he does differently is flies first class. Everything else is pretty much the same as everyone else.
But we have this problem, because obviously for a lot of new traders, they're trying to earn a good income. They're trying to get that independence and freedom. That's what they want. Presumably that's what they're going to training for, one of the drivers. And they want the financial rewards that go with it. And they're not getting it at the beginning quite often. Or sometimes some get it too quickly and then they never get it after that. So yeah. There's a real balance and a paradox here with money that in the beginning, when you most need it, it's hard to get. And if you do get it and you start getting it, you want to kind of detach from it a little bit. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people, I often say to them when they start, particularly retail traders, try and have another source of income, or, you know, at least have a, you know, try not to earn money, because if you need to earn money, you won't. From no. It becomes a distraction. You know, you want to, it takes you away from process. So in a sense, it affects peak performance. It's that mindset again, that peak performance mindset.
Just back to that. No, you're right. I mean, the desire to earn rapidly becomes a distraction because your dream is suddenly in control rather than as part of something that hopefully one day will happen. Suddenly you've got this mindset that has shifted into the fact that it's about the dream, the dream, the dream, the dream. I want it now. And that becomes a mental distraction that actually gets in the way of you achieving your dream.
It almost captures the whole dilemma of peak performance. We want it so much, we can't get it.
Precisely.
So this is fascinating because it's made me think that we really should get an episode about the relationship with money.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. But what is it? What are, you know, what's money to Mr. Goldstein? What's money to Mr. Randall? What's money to Mrs. Goldstein? What's money to Mrs. Randall? You know, we look at things. Our value points are very, very different, you know, and sometimes the reward. I remember when Sting went up to collect, I think it was a Grammy, and he was given this Grammy, and of course it comes with, you know, the fact that there's some glory and there's, you know, there's some money around it. And he held this award out and he spoke to the audience, and he just said, music is the reward. So the fact that he was just in music and he was creating music because that was his passion and that was his purpose. That was his reward. It was nothing to do about money. It was nothing to do about winning a Grammy. And, you know, he said music is the reward for me. And I think that's a really good mindset to have. Where actually your purpose should be where your reward is, but perhaps trading is sort of a vocation until you perfect it to the point that you want it to be your purpose.
Absolutely. And actually, I'm reminded that we have done one episode about money, sort of, which was an episode with Morgan Housel, who wrote the book last year.
Oh, you did that on your own, yeah, because I was somewhere else that day. Yeah, no.
You were down the pub having a drink, but, but we were... We did the episode with Morgan Housel on psychology of money. And I would, honestly, this has been one of our best episodes, that one. And so many people have commented on it. Mm. And the book is brilliant. It is one of the best books that I've ever read on the theme of, you know, connected to trading and investment and this whole business we're in. And I highly recommend it to people. And if there's one part of it, it's the man in the car paradox. It's literally the shortest chapter in the book. 2 pages, but it is one of the most brilliant chapters in any book I've ever read on the topic of trading and investment. So again, and I know it's just come out in hardback, actually, so The Psychology of Money, Audible version's brilliant. But let's get back to you. Your peak performance coaching program.
Yeah.
People want to know about it, I guess. People want to understand a little bit more how they can do it and what they get out of it. So this is your chance to tell them.
Well, it will essentially reset your mindset to be able to adapt and be agile in a super fast world where opportunities are difficult to find. And actually, if you're not too careful, the challenges start to become something difficult. So it is a program of developing through some of the skills that are used from a US military point of view and a mind fitness sense, of developing really really, it's sort of a superpower. I mean, it sounds like something really, really strange, but it is. It's certainly something that when I developed it, it felt like I had something going on that was really, really different from anyone around me. And people knew that I was doing something because they'd say, don't know how you're managing to do this. A bit of an enigma. I don't, what you've done, many people couldn't do. And I'm not smart, clever, or university, sort of superstar, but I crafted my mind into being a weapon, really, and was using it to my tactical and strategic advantage by committing myself to doing it. And it's the things around that I share in the program in the context of markets. So it's developing mental muscle. It's protecting mental health as well, because there's an element of that that is quite sinister in the world of markets and having to deal with the things that we're getting involved with. And it's developing a concept of mental wealth, where we actually use our mental structure to develop a sense of a different type of achievement that we can all nurture and be educated and be coached and mentored around to achieve something that's sustainable and profitable in the sphere of markets that you want to operate in. So it goes through all those things, but it also tries to awaken a different type of awareness. And it's a bit like that Wizard of Oz moment. You kind of think that's normal. And I've had so many people reflect to me on this, that it's a bit like suddenly as Dorothy goes through the door when it's black and white and suddenly it turns into blooming Technicolor. That's the shift that people get when they go through the program. It changes what they see as a two-dimensional black and white world into a three-dimensional HDMI world. And when they can see markets in that degree of clarity, they see a very, very different opportunity in the market. And that's what I achieve in the program.
And I know this is something you said you've worked on yourself with, and then you've adapted it through over a period of time and evolved it. So what is the structure of it? If someone comes to you and say, I'm really interested in this program, how many sessions, how long are the sessions, what would they get, and would it be bespoke to them?
So it starts off with what we call sort of a chemistry call of understanding, about just the initial dynamics. It then starts off with the inner game. It starts off almost with a blank canvas that we've got a human being here. We need to guess, almost forget all the information and just reset the human being to be in the best capable natural state as possible. So it's the inner game, really. It then develops into the inner game, but it then shifts into the outer game, which is a bit more behavior, but it's about process and what you do and how you do it and how effectively you're doing it and how you can improve that effectiveness by changing attitude. So there's some self-reflection within that. It then, of course, shifts into a broadening of awareness and understanding just how unaware most people are, and tuning into this developed mind of turning black and white into HDMI. So the program exists over about 10 hours, 10 to 15 hours. It does depend. Over the course of 3 months.
Right. And how many times would they meet? How many times would they engage with you? How long would the engagement last?
So it'd be 10 engagements of approximately 90 minutes per engagement over the course of about 3 months. Dependent upon their needs, the gathering of the sessions can be quite tight at the beginning and then open up to be a little bit more spaced, or it can be spaced across the whole. It all depends on what needs to be achieved early on. If there's a lot that needs to be achieved, there's almost like a four session over 4 weeks just to go into the changing of these things that are getting in people's way, so they can start to then broaden out into the other opportunities that lie ahead and, apply things in a better way. And there's time when you have to step back and say, okay, now apply this. And then we engage again about, well, what showed up? What became easy? What was a challenge? what still seems like, well, what's turned up new that needs to be looked at in the whole concept of the solution. Yeah, and of course, very, very often these 10 sessions turn into once a month sort of engagement where, because people feel that they need a bit of a lifeboat. They need someone that they can pick up a phone call and just go through, something that's turned up that needs a bit of work done to understand how best to achieve it. So the comfort of a lifeboat is something that a lot of people like, because within markets, as you know, within a trading room, it's difficult to turn to someone and share your woe with them. A lot of people don't really want to share their woes with their wife or their family, but actually have somebody else that's sort of third party where they can just reflect on some challenges and get at least some ideas around perhaps how to deal with markets-based catastrophe or even screen lock or mental lock or mental block and too much dwelling, all these types of things. They can be looked at, as one goes through time just with this monthly engagement.
Mm. Mm. And I just want to throw something out there, because I know people are hesitant about investing in coaching because it's not cheap. And sometimes they think, is this worth spending the money on? And when I say it's not cheap, I mean it can be equivalent to 2 years worth of gym membership. So it's not overly expensive either.
Mm-hmm.
But what they get from that investment is a return. And it's useful to not look at it as a cost, but as an investment. Because the idea is that you are much stronger, you are better resourced, and then you are going to make more money in the years ahead. And that return can be 20, 30, depending on how much capital you're using, hundreds or even thousands of times the investment over the next few years. So yeah. I just want to put that out there as well.
That definitely.
It's and of course, looking at this.
Yeah, and this toolkit is not just for markets. It's for life in general as well. So a lot of these things you can replicate into just your optimizing how you engage with life is part of this story, as we work upon the fact that balance is super important, particularly as we've got all this, we're about to have this renaissance of, certainly in the UK, or potentially escaping from COVID. We want to be engaging and enjoying that and not carrying on looking at our screen thinking this is my world, because we've been stuck looking at that for a year or so. We need to give ourselves a bit of a break and actually realize there's a bit more going on than just looking at a screen. And actually, the more we balance what we do, the better we become at performing when it comes to perform.
Yeah, brilliant. And of course, I will repeat the details of how to contact you in the show notes, which are on the website, on the podcast site, rather, and on our blog. But it is... to reach you directly, it's mark@alpha-mind.net.
Yep, so, or it's alphamind102, which is my Twitter handle.
DM you @alphamind102, or you can be reached, Mark Randall, on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And, of course, just info@alpha-mind.net if you can't remember any of that. Okay, it's been great. I mean, as a partner of yours, it's great, and I know we talk about these, but I've actually learned a lot about your process and your method, which I didn't even know. So it's made me think about a few things, and I hope the audience have found this useful. So thank you very much, Mark.
Well, look, thank you very much indeed. And I hope, as I say, someone's at least learned something from that little chat. And I think you always learn that from whenever Steve and I get talking, we don't stop. I think the first time we sort of reached out and contacted each other, what was meant to be a 1 hour lunch turned into about a 5 hour lunch, because we suddenly thought there is so much we should be doing here, because there is so much that is of this sort of material that is not being done out there, or is being done in a very, very bad way. So look forward to greater things from Alpha Mind. That's my message to you all, as I guess say goodbye. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this week's Air for Mind podcast. If you have enjoyed this podcast or any of our past podcasts, we would be delighted if you could rate the podcast on whichever service you use, or even better, leave a review. Thank you also to our podcast sponsor, the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. You can go to technicalanalysts.com to find out more about their services and to explore becoming a member of the STA. As a reminder, at Air for Mind, we focus on trader and investor personal growth and development. We offer coaching programs which are geared towards developing the key human, personal and behavioral skills that are so vital in helping people grow their performance and take their trading or investing to a higher level. Our clients come from a range of backgrounds from across the world. These include leading portfolio managers working at some of the world's largest hedge funds, asset management firms and sovereign wealth funds. We also work with investment banks and some of the world's largest commodity and energy trading businesses. Our clients also come from a myriad of other backgrounds, including family offices, proprietary trading firms, as well as many serious private retail traders. In addition to trade and investor coaching, our services extend to executive, leadership and team coaching with a specialist focus on financial markets, investment and risk businesses. To know more about our services, visit our webpage alpha-mind.net or email us info@alpha-mind.net or visit the Alpha Mind blog page for more contact information. If you would like to sign up for our regular newsletter, you can do so on the page link at the top of the Alpha Mind blog, and you can also listen to our podcasts on our new Alpha Mind YouTube channel. Finally, you can follow us and connect with us on social media. We are active on LinkedIn in our own names, Stephen Goldstein and Mark Randall, or through the Alpha Mind group on LinkedIn, which has over 15,000 members. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handles are AlphaMind101 and AlphaMind102. We wish you well, stay safe, and have a great week.